for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 395 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Alan Ling, the driving force behind Genesis 2, a terrific comic series that deals with genetic enhancements, a futuristic society, and all kinds of fascinating characters, including wonderful people, and a really interesting nemesis who has plans for the Earth in the future. We talk about how the book came to be, about what they do at comic conventions, including San Diego Comic-Con, which he was at this year, and what we can expect from them in the future. Lots more good stuff, I expect. We also talk about the industry, as well as what it's like to produce an indie comic and to get the word out about your creation. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to be talking with Alan Ling, one of the creative forces behind Genesis 2, which is a great sci-fi series that I picked up last year, and we've got new progress on it. How are you doing tonight, Alan?
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. I'm doing great. We just put out two new chapters of Genesis 2, which is 5 and 6, and they're actually prequels to chapters 1 through 4. So we decided to go into more of a historical, you know, development of the two main characters, Daniel and Lisa, explore their, not their childhoods, but their high school experience, as well as college experience and graduate school experience.
Okay. So I got to ask, of course, I didn't get to San Diego this year. How do you get a hold of those chapters? I got your hardcover. I have to, I'm going to get what comes after that.
Well, right now we're trying to get them to be posted digitally online, okay. And we're going to be doing that on our website, which is Genesis2Comics.com, and we're going to hopefully load it up in about the next 2 or 3 weeks, and everybody can actually download individual chapters. Or I wouldn't recommend downloading the whole hardcover, because we've heard that downloading those gigabytes of 134 pages created a real kind of a clog, unless your DSL is really, really stable and good.
Wow. So, yeah. Well, let's talk about the book then. Let's get into that. What is Genesis 2? Why don't you describe it for us?
Well, Genesis 2 is really four chapters of a graphic novel that follows the events that occur within a 24 to 36 hour period between two friends who grew up and became scientists. And one of them is Daniel, and he's the main character, who's a genetic engineer, and he has three very oversized hybrid animals that he created himself. And they are, turns out they're his protectors as well as his guardians. And they just love him. They're family. And then the other person who is involved, the protagonist, his name is Lisa. And she's a tech scientist who invents technology which, unfortunately, which falls into the wrong hands, can be used to assassinate world leaders or anybody who gets in the way of this other malevolent force, which guy's name is Franklin Voigt. He's, of course, the evil guy in the story.
Because it's interesting, because you've got the world is a different place in this book.
Oh, very different, yes. So
it's, and I understand it takes place in San Francisco.
Yes.
For the story take. And according to the website of this Pace magazine, there's a half paragraph that says, humans have mastered space travel and interspecies genetic engineering, which, of course, is what
Daniel did, yes.
Governments are in shambles, and corporations operate as nation states with private militia. So what, you know, given current things that are going on, this isn't a far-fetched story as far as this goes. I think you guys are ahead of the curve when you came up with the storyline. You want to talk about the setup and how you came to this?
Well, we were trying to base it off of projecting on current events. And as you know, there's a lot of when Christian and I first started writing, this was almost 4 years ago, you know, ISIL or ISIS was doing a really big, you know, destructive war in the Middle East. And they're saying, oh, shoot. Are these guys going to win? I mean, they're just wiping out entire nation states, and they're taking over governments. Mm-hmm. And I projected and said, what happens if it just kept going? What happens if we couldn't stop it in time? And then half the world would be taken over by a bunch of terrorists. Mm-hmm. And we projected there. There's also the global warming thing, which we also said, okay, what happens if global warming really is, you know, it's not going to stop, and all the oceans do start to rise. So we created a world where, you know, it looks kind of grim. We got, you know, 50% of the world's ruled, you know, by terrorists, and the other, you know, there's another extra 100 feet of water everywhere. So, you know, San Francisco is kind of underwater, and so is a whole bunch of other places. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yes, I'm interested when the very first chapter is called Reality Check. And that's where we get introduced to a lot of these characters and stuff. You actually start out in the past with the two kids are playing. And interestingly enough, they are drones, of course, are things that are getting even more popular, seems like, every day. And there's a drone involved in the situation there. Talk about that, because, you know, I used to know this family. The father was into computers, and his, like, 2 and 3-year-old kids could get on computers and run them better than I could as an adult. And I was looking at these kids, you know, and one of them is using one of those drones. And I've just kind of thought, it just reminded me of that experience. And I thought that is so, you know, forward-looking. And then, of course, you've got cat with two heads as well. You know, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a cat that's involved and they're looking for the cat. Talk about that, the setting up of the characters like that.
Well, right then and there, you see Lisa, I won't give away too much, who basically is a tech scientist, right? And she's one piloting a drone. And then you have Daniel, who, you know, that's his two-headed cat. He probably came up with the cat on his own. And that we wanted to introduce them as childhood friends and also, you know, set up the whole vibe between the two of them, that they have been friends forever and they have always liked science. You know, it's not too obvious with Daniel with the two-headed cat until you find out later on that's what he's been experimenting with the whole time, is animal DNA.
So is Daniel patterned after, and Lisa, are they patterned after people you know? Are they creations of your imagination? How did you come up with the characters?
They came up with the names because of I'm a good friends with Daniel Wu, he's the guy who's plays Sonny in Into the Badlands. So he's a movie actor friend of mine, and his wife's name is Lisa. So that's how I just grabbed names from people I knew. They knew about it too, but they didn't care. So, as far as, you know, childhood friends, I have childhood friends, and I, you know, and those are, it's a bond, and there's no secrets between friends. Right. We don't, you know, it's good to have friends that you've known since you were in fourth grade or third grade and seventh grade. There's no secrets. You don't have to posture or hide anything, because, you know, they know where you came from. And I think having a friend like that, you know, if something was to happen, you know, would you literally drop everything to go and help them? And the answer for most people is, I think most people would drop everything and go help their friend. Mm-hmm. And I've done that a couple of times, and they've done that, and people have done that for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was kind of the basis of going backwards and taking a look at people when they're younger and you know, how the friendships form in the beginning and what happens later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, of course, and then the very first sequence, I don't think we're giving away too much, when we talk about San Francisco and there are drones going around the sky, and one of them manages to go straight for where Daniel lives. Yeah. And you know, to this day, I'm kind of going, I'm not exactly clear. Was that, did they really make that happen and try to go after him, or was that just happened to be an accident?
It's an accident. Okay. It was an accident. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, there are things that may appear, you know, purposeful or actually sometimes very random, and you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time or the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And, of course, he's got what helps him is his dog. Yes. The armadillo dog. The name of Ardo.
Yes.
Ardo is his
Ardo,
name.
Ardo, yes.
And he's, you know, the plane is trying to get through the glass window, and the dog turns into a cannonball.
basically, and
exactly
stops it from getting any to hurting him. And I was just like, wow. I said, there's good reasons for having a dog like that around, just in case something like this ever happens.
We love our animals, that whether they're just there to, you know, be company or they're to protect the family. I've been, you know, on the receiving end of cats or other or dogs, and I had a great dog named Glenda, and man, she protected my family. She was great. And, you know, she didn't bite anybody, but she protected my kids when they went out and some stranger approached them. She would growl and show her teeth and like, whoa. Mm. And those are, you know, we have our animals, our family, they're our friends. Mm. So absolutely. Yeah, I have affection for them. So yeah.
Yeah. Cause they're characters in their own right. You know, in the book, because they have things to do with, you're right, with protecting him, with mm-hmm. other things going on. I got to talk about the gorilla.
Gorilla eagle.
Yeah, that was the one that just surprised me, because at one point they're walking, they're doing something, and all of a sudden they look up, and they're in a nest. Yeah. It's this gorilla/eagle. And I just looked at it and I went, holy mackerel. And the interesting thing is that, you know, at one point they say he has keen eyes that are always scanning. Mm-hmm. And even though he's, you know, the way that the and you have to give the artist credit on this one too. It may have been your idea too to do it, but yeah. he has this kind of almost a sinister look to the eyes, the way he does.
Yeah, we didn't want him to be too sinister. You would have wanted him to actually be kind of playful, mm-hmm. but he's really super strong. So, you know, here he is in the comic, he's popping, you know, the doll heads off, and, you know, it's this little weird game that he's playing, but it's a precursor to things that happen later on in the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And that was, Christian and I came up with some funny ideas on how the character was created. And we just thought combining a bird which is very frail, mm-hmm. with a gorilla, which is very, you know, very robust, mm-hmm. and having him hit things and the feathers fly off of it would be hilarious. Mm. So that was Christian's contribution to that creation of that character.
Because I was like, wow. I said, you know, when and he's big too. That's the thing. He's not small. You know,
no, he's not.
As big as a gorilla, but he's got the wings of the eagles to go with them. And I just, you know, I was a little spooked, I have to say. It was really kind of, that's something, you know, it's because genetic engineering is something that's still being debated today.
Yeah. And you'll find in chapter 6, which we just put out, there's a big, big, we talked about, is there going to be an international law that prevents people from dabbling with human DNA and messing with it? You know, right now there's unwritten that you should not be dabbling with human DNA. Mm-hmm. But yet somebody in China just was messing with human DNA and the human genome and engineered some kids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether we can stop it or not, I mean, we don't know. I think it's going to happen. It's inevitable.
See, one thing that really gets me is the intelligence of the genetically enhanced animals. I wonder if there's some human involvement. You know, is there some human DNA going in there that makes them a little more perceptive, let's say? Because the thing that most people expect is when there's like a genetic enhancement like this, when the blending of the two characters, they're not as smart as they should be. But these guys are much smarter. I mean, you know, Aldo knows he's got to save his master, and the eagle gorilla is, I don't know. I think there's something going on with him.
You caught some very interesting, Wayne, you're very perceptive. You caught some very interesting subtle things that I threw throughout the whole story. There's a section where when Daniel finally meets, you know, Elon Musk the third, and there's a scene where I showed that their eye colors, which are golden, are all the same between Igor, the eagle gorilla, the armadillo dog, Ardo, and Cap, the porcupine cat, and Musk. They all have the same eye color. So I just threw that in there because I said, okay, let's get people wondering what the heck is really going on here.
I didn't notice that till you said that, and I just looked at it.
But you know what? I think it was subliminal, because when you had mentioned that, mm-hmm. I didn't say anything throughout the whole the whole thing. We didn't talk about any human DNA being mixed in with the animals. So that's another – so not a spoiler, but another insight that I'd snuck in there, and Wayne, you actually caught it. So that was very good. It's probably subliminal.
It's such a great thing. And we got to talk a little bit about the robot, you know, the drone attacks, or I don't know if it attacks. It ends up in the room, his bedroom. And almost immediately, there's another flying machine with a robot in it. And, yes. You know, this is where I think with the corporations and stuff all come in.
Yeah.
Something goes awry. They've got robots who are going to go out there and fix any mishaps, shall we say. And I love the way that the robot talks. It talks like a computer. You know, it doesn't talk like a human. It's not, because a lot of people, what they do, try to make robots more acceptable. They make them talk like humans, like Star Wars is a good example. Yeah. But yours doesn't do that. You know, please move 0.5 meters to your left. I mean, that's I can just imagine, I can't duplicate what I think the voice is going to sound like, but I'm sure it's very monotone, you know, talk like that kind of stuff is what I figure. And, wow, that was really, that's interesting because, you know, in a sense, what you're saying is the corporation doesn't care what people think of how the robots function as long as they do their job.
Yeah, we actually took the robot to be kind of like a little bit of a law enforcement, like the IRS or something, where, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on. We're just going to walk into your house, and I don't care about your privacy or anything. We're just going to do our job and clean up. Mm-hmm. This doesn't matter, regardless of what you think. Mm-hmm. And if you try to get in our way, we're going to call other people to move you out of the way so we can still do our job.
One of my very favorite ones is where he's telling Daniel, it'll take an estimated 3 hours to complete repairs and cleanup of your living quarters and remove the trash, I guess they call it. We will contact you upon completion. And do you agree? He says, do I have a choice? Negative. He goes.
He's just informing him. Yeah, that's
funny. This is for your information. See, normally I would expect a corporation or somebody to try to make a robot or a cyborg or something that would be more human. But see, you're saying that wouldn't be the case. And I like that.
I think there's more invasiveness in the future society. It may be even less user-friendly. Hmm. You know, everything is very, very automated. Everything needs to be done quickly. Everything needs to be done efficiently. And if you're going to be trying to interject your own personal feelings or anything in there, you're just standing in the way of progress. So move aside.
Well, then there's other little drones that they use, and then there's one. What's funny is Aldo gets a hold of one of them, and both the robot and Daniel yell out, "No!"
Yeah.
And there's a funny thing because he's got it. And then when the little robot comes out, what he says, "Oh, the horror, he goes.
That was like an Edgar Allan Poe thing, right?
Yeah, that was great stuff. So I really got a kick out of that. And, you know, I also, like I said, I was enjoying the view of the future. There wasn't much in the way of cars going around. People were largely walking places. There were motorized boats kind of going around and stuff. So I got a kick out of that because, you know, in the current climate, you know, there's a lot of discussion about cars and stuff like that and how they're going to function in future society. Again, I think you were ahead of the curve by doing this where there's really are no automobiles running in the streets. People are walking.
Well, there's because all the streets are flooded. Oh. So you'll get the boats more than you'll get the cars in the future. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking.
Pretty cool. I have to say, I really liked it. Now, talk to me about the art, because I like the art. It has a little bit of an anime feel to it.
Yes. So Christian and I decided that we'd try to make it a little bit manga type look to it. Mm-hmm. And then we'd also try to colorize it a little bit more, because manga, if you look at some pure manga, it's all pretty much line drawing in black and white. Mm-hmm. When you add the color, it adds more dimension and adds more liveliness to it. So we decided to take that kind of approach to the way the comic book looked. And, you know, again, Christian spent 3 years coming up with the storyboards and the art and everything. And it kind of changes a little bit every now and then because it took so long to finish. So, Christian even changed the way he drew a little bit too while he was working on it. So, yeah. So we try to keep the art quality the same. If you notice, there are different artists working on it too. We have some double page spreads. We have some chapter dividers, which act as covers for the floppies versus the hardcover. And so we have different artists, Nate Van Dyke, who draws for heavy metal, Manuel Martinez, who draws for DC and Marvel. We had them help fill out some of the pages, and which also took some pressure off of Christian so he didn't have to do all the work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked, the two of you developed this together. I mean, was it like back and forth? Did he draw things based on what you were suggesting? How did that coalition work? How did you work together?
I think there was a combination of a little bit of everything going on. I mean, I drew storyboards, which Christian followed. Mm-hmm. And then he sometimes took his own initiative to start drawing stuff on his own and coming up. Chapter 2, for example, in the hardcover, was pretty much mostly all Christian. I think I definitely did a lot of the story, but Christian basically drew almost everything. I did not contribute to any of the storyboards in that chapter because he wanted to do the giant robot. There's like a giant defense robot in there, and I said, okay, do the giant robot. so we had to throw the giant robot in there. So it was pretty funny. He liked to do robots.
Obviously. I mean, he had the robot in the very, very first chapter. We see him. That was a great.
Yeah.
Again, that robot just gets me because I'm so used to robots and everything being very trying to put humans at ease, and these guys make none of that. There is zero happening with that, which is just it's a great thing about that. And of course, the other one in part two, that's a whole nother story. We won't get into that because I think that's I don't want to spoil too much too far into it. But I have to say, what I got from you, I was at San Diego last year and I got the hardcover, which I tremendously enjoyed. I thought that was great stuff.
Thank you. I
liked the art because it's an interesting mix. It's not too detailed, but it's detailed enough. You know,
right.
If you had too much more detail in it, it would be a little distracting. But instead,
you got just right. Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you.
Was that the intention? I mean, did you want to go and make it? We talked about a little bit about anime and stuff like that. Did you want to make a simpler sort of storytelling?
Yes, we didn't want. I looked at some other comic books and. You can't really tell what's going on. There's so much activity, and we wanted the lines to be really clean, the colors to be very clean, so that when you're looking at it, it's pleasing to your eye, so you're not distracted. You can read the script, the balloons and the captions, all very clean, so that when people are reading it, they're not stressing out while they're trying to read it. What's that going on in the corner? What's this? It's very simple and a pleasure to read.
I love it. I think it's a very nice way to do it because, because a lot of science fiction stuff tends to be really busy. I think it's the only way I can describe it. And so when I came across yours, which I could clearly tell what's going on from page to page and panel to panel, and I could tell all the persons apart. And two of the things I always want to make sure an artist does really well is action sequences and facial expressions.
Yes.
Because I need both of those to work really well for me to get the story.
Yes.
What's going on? And so both of these are really well done. I thought that the action sequences, wow. I felt like I was in the room watching.
Thank you. Well, Manuel Martinez did just really good double splash pages with tons of fighting on them. I mean, he does a couple of those. And Christian actually spends a lot of time. He poses, has his friend pose, and he goes, let me draw this pose, this fighting pose or leaping in the air pose. And so he uses his friends as live models to be able to draw some of the poses. And I thought that was really great about Christian.
Of course, he's in a great tradition for doing that. You know who else does that is Alex Ross. He has his
friends do it. Yeah.
Or himself.
And that's the best way to do it.
There's that one with the Joker and Harley Quinn where it's him standing there as the Joker and he takes a photograph and then he paints based on what that is. And so this is following the great tradition. I mean, Alex Ross is one of my very favorite artists.
Well, Alex is a whole different breed. I hope there is support to create really great art still. I mean, when I do my I'm working on these different projects right now, and I make sure the artists are well supported. Mm-hmm. I bought one of them a scanner, digital scanner. He didn't even have his own digital scanner. He was going to Kinko's to do all this stuff. I said, no, you got to get your own digital scanner. Mm-hmm. Another one of my artists, he was working on old technology on his Cintiq tablet. Oh, wow. And I bought him a new tablet. I said, you got to get a new one. And so the whole thing is, I don't just pay my artists. I also support them, because I think, you know, without the support of the producer or the writer, or they're not feeling really secure about a lot of things. Matter of fact, most comic book artists are not the most secure people in the world, if you ever met them. Mm-hmm. And I love them, because I'm one of them. And I feel like if I can support them in any way I can, I'll do it. You know, I meet with a lot of them. I meet in person. I mean, we meet for dinner. We talk about things, and we talk on the phone a lot. There's a lot of collaboration and a lot of respect and love for the whole participatory process of creating something from nothing. Mm-hmm. And so that's my greatest joy, is working with such incredible talent and being able to, you know, be the art director a little bit, but at the same time have them come up with their own stuff that makes everything even better. Mm-hmm. It's really been a great experience.
I'm always happy to hear that, because I know some folks who decided that artists should not get paid. They should get the exposure for that, so they don't get paid. And I'm always like, how do you expect an artist to survive?
Yeah, but they see, it's like musicians, right? People, mm-hmm. You know, never mind, you've been practicing this musical instrument for, you know, a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. You could do it for free. Mm-hmm. They don't, it's the same thing. They don't respect artists. Artists work on their trade, and yet they're expected to do stuff for free. How are they going to survive? Mm-hmm. And so I don't expect any of my artists to work for free. I pay them at actually higher than their typical rate is, because when we work together, I probably demand more than the average publisher. Hmm. So, you know, and they deliver. And so we have a nice relationship. I was Zach Atkinson, who did chapter 5 and 6, art and color, and did some of the color for Genesis 1, chapters 3 and 4. I flew him out to San Diego Comic-Con this year and paid for his hotel. Wow. We even went to Disneyland. I paid for Disneyland. We went to Disneyland together, and we talked. We stood in line, and we just talked about comics and what to do next and stories. Mm-hmm. And he lives in Illinois, in a town of maybe 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, yeah. See, so it's great to get him out.
See, I edit an indie comic by the name of Stabity Bunny. And the writer lives here where I am in Florida. The artist lives on the top of a mountain in North Carolina. And the colorist lives in the Philippines.
Exactly.
And so they have never been in the same room. Yeah. So it's really kind of interesting, but they communicate thanks to the internet and things like that a lot, like what you're talking about. They'll be on the phone with each other. They'll be sending stuff back and forth to each other. You know, I help with the script. I make sure the script makes sense. And
that's awesome.
And the dialogue makes sense. I'm not perfect. I mean, I'm not a machine in that sense, but I sometimes I get stuff and I go, boy, you meant to say that? Yeah, I always like to point out there's a difference between let's eat, comma, grandpa, and let's eat grandpa. You know, there's a big difference between those two. And so I always have to point that out. Some indie comics, yours, I didn't notice that. I stumble through the text. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. And yours made sense to me, thankfully. And I lose myself in the text. Instead of sitting there going, now, wait a minute, what did they mean to say with that? What was that they were trying to say? With yours, I didn't have to worry about that. Your stuff was all nice and cogent and pulled me along. I mean, the pages just fly by when I'm reading.
Thanks, Wayne. Really, that's what we wanted to read like a movie. We wanted people to sit down and look at the graphic novel like they're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. And what's happening right now is I'm going to segue into the movie thing, is that we actually had producers and other we actually have a screenplay writer working on turning chapters 1 through 4, maybe even 5 and 6, into a movie. So we have somebody actually working on it. His name is Desmond Chiam, and Desmond actually is an actor, writer, and he also happened to have a law degree. And the guy was in the Chronicles, Shannara Chronicles, mm-hmm. NCIS. He's and he just recently finished filming another season of some other show. Mm. Kind of like it's kind of Miami Vice, but it's in New Zealand. Mm. So, guy's a prolific actor, but he also is, you know, hopefully going to write a screenplay based on my my book. So we're delving into now the big screen, and that's exciting. It's scary.
Is it live action or animated?
Well, that's the other thing is we have to decide whether it's going to be one of these Marvel type CGI live action, or is it going to be some kind of Spider-Verse looking thing? Mm-hmm. We don't know yet.
Mm. Either way would work well. I don't have a preference.
Thank you. I'm hoping. I think it'll be great.
Now, which leads to the question, keeping up with the stuff that you do, is there social media avenues that we can follow you on and keep up with Genesis 2 and how you're doing?
On Facebook, Genesis 2 Comics, and they'll be able to find us on Facebook relatively easy. Mm-hmm. So facebook.com/Genesis, and it could be like two as in II,
right?
Comics. Mm-hmm. And our Instagram is Genesis2 as in the number 2 comics.
Okay. Any other places? I mean, what about Twitter? Things like
that. Twitter, we have Genesis TWO comic. Hmm. And our website is www.genesis2comics.com. Okay. And the website is the best way to go to get information or to make downloads. That's the easiest one to get anything about us going on. We keep that one current, and we also have a whole bunch of extras on our website. Just a bunch of interviews and everything on there too.
Now, one thing I noticed too is on this pastemagazine.com, there's a whole article and a series of stuff about the book. One of the things I noticed too is if you want to read the first chapter, you can download it for free there. You sign up for some little bits with it, and you can download the ebook and you can read the first chapter. And then after that, see, I was taken by the cover. I just loved the cover of it.
Oh, thank you.
And like I said, the hardback, and I'm a hardback guy too, and there you are with this beautiful hardback, larger than usual hardback too.
Yes.
Which I just, of course, I couldn't resist that. I had to have that, and then I read the book, and it was one of those things that pulls you right in, and I'm when you get to the last page, you go, that's the last page? Rats. So that's why I'm anxious to see these other chapters that are coming up. I'm dying to read them. I can't wait to get a hold of them.
No, thank you.
Great fun. So, you mentioned there's other projects you're working on. There are other things that you can tell us about?
I can kind of talk about them kind of a little bit. I have two other comic books. One is called the Undefeated, and it's actually very more adult. Not talking about just sexual content kind of thing. It does have a little bit of nudity in it, but more mature themes that deal with, you know, people's emotions and conflicts and relationships, as well as sci-fi. We put a lot of science fiction in there, put a little horror in some of them too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's, you know, exploring the way, you know, the way people think and the way, you know, what happens when a relationship, you know, goes sour. Yeah. One of them has to do with a superhero who basically he's almost invincible, but he doesn't feel any pain. But he gets hurt, but he doesn't feel pain. And he's got superhuman strength, and he finally falls in love with somebody. But that person is not good for him.
Okay.
I was gonna say that. But I'm going to stop right there because it's a great comic book. I've had people call me after I was handing out samples of them, and people would call me and says, I cried reading that comic book. And I'm thinking, wow, that's good, because it made somebody feel something. And so, Wayne, I'll send that to you.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
Got to get all your information.
I write reviews also on the website. That's a major spoiler. So I often write reviews. I just wrote a review of a brand new book that's coming out called Red Winter.
Wow.
From Scout Comics. It's about it's like Criminal in Russia is what it is.
Ooh.
Which I really liked. And I loved that. I got to read the first three, and boy, I loved it. So it's consistent.
Yeah.
But And it, because that one, do we follow that through the social media you've mentioned already as well?
Yeah, what's going to happen with this one, we there are short stories, all of them. There's like three short stories, there's anthologies for the undefeated. Mm-hmm. And we have one character, and the character who I just told you about, the more invincible superhero guy who doesn't feel pain but gets hurt, mm-hmm. he will probably be a repeat character throughout all of this undefeated series. But we keep rotating different artists and different people and different stories for the other two stories. Mm-hmm. So we'll always have three stories, but we always kind of rotate artists and cool. and yeah. So it'll make people think when they look at the art. The art's amazing, mm-hmm. and the stories are just to make people stop and think about mm-hmm. you know mm-hmm. things. Just that's, how it work, you know.
There's two things I like in the writing of a story: something that makes me think, and something that teaches me something.
Yes,
those are things I always look for. So I'm always happy with that. Now, okay, so that's one. Is there anything else besides that, or is that keeping you busy?
No, I'm a busy guy, so I also am. As you know, I'm a physical therapist also, so I have my own clinic. I have 25 employees, cool. so I do that. That's what I do for my day job. Gotcha. And so at night, I become this comic book publisher, artist, creator. Cool. So we also are working on. I'm working on two other projects for movie producer directors, mm-hmm. and these are their pet projects, and they want. And I can't talk about it because I signed a non-disclosure agreement. Right. But it's interesting because they've realized that graphic novels and comics. Are a perfect way to get other people to be interested in actually turning something into a movie.
Yes.
Because you're already, the storyboards are there, the character designs are there, the sets, everything is already designed. Yep. And that's the best way to pitch it. And so they're now coming to me mm-hmm. and they're saying, we loved your book. We want you to use something, even if it's 30 pages mm-hmm. or hundreds of pages. We want you to do this for us because we think we have a better chance of turning this into something if you are helping. And see, I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah, well, I've often told people that these are comic books. You've got perspective, you've got direction, you've got color, you've got the whole thing is all there. You're basically showing somebody how you could do it
exactly
on the screen. And I always tell people this, and this is why I just got done watching the first episode of The Boys on Amazon Prime. And of course, you know, I read the comics, and so I'm sitting there going like, whoop, yeah, they did that in the comic. Oh yeah, I remember that from the comic. So it's interesting because I don't know if you want to be too close to what the comic is. You've got to adapt to what your medium is. You can't make it look like just a comic book on the screen. You've got to use the visual medium much better to fit what you're doing.
Absolutely.
But it's just great stuff. So, man, I can't wait to see this stuff. It's going to be good things to see. As far as you did the hardcover, are you going to do another hardcover, or are you? How do you do that?
I was accused of doing everything, and I no foul language here, but they said you do everything ass backwards, Alan. How come you start out with all this thing so big, and then you start to scale backwards? And I said, well, part of it is I don't want to start at a point where I'm competing at the same level of everybody else. I'd like to start bigger. So, you know, when I went to Comic-Con, I had three life-size models of my characters made. You know, Igor was 11 feet tall, and, you know, Ardo was, you know, 300 pounds, and I don't know how many, and he was like, you know, 6.5 feet long, and, you know, Cap, the Porcupine Cat was, you know, plus his tail was 9 feet long. Wow. So I made these animals, and we made them out of museum quality kind of, you know, materials. Wow. And so I went to Comic-Con like that, and people are saying, is this a movie already? I mean, why are you doing it this big? And I'm like, well, I'm hoping it becomes a movie, so I'm doing it like this. Mm-hmm. And so, but that's the way I roll. I mean, I can't, I can't do anything. I can't do anything that's understated. I always have to make an impact and let people know how serious I am.
Well, good. So, because, you know, if you underdo it, you know, people look at it and go, oh, it's too bad you didn't this and you didn't that.
Right.
The little book I'm involved with has a plush rabbit in it. So what do we sell at the booths? We sell little plush rabbits.
Absolutely. You perfect. Know,
it's just the thing to do. It just makes perfect sense for that. So I always – and they sell pretty well too, I have to be honest with you.
The plushies sell great. I wish I had the – I wish I – had the budget to go for the plushies. I'm just a little bit nervous about having to bring all the stuff there, and then if they don't sell all the way, they bring it all back.
Oh, yeah. Well, you go San Diego. Are there other cons you go to during the year, or San Diego pretty much keep you going?
It looks like I'm going to go to WonderCon for 2020, and then again do San Diego. Each time I go to the con, it's a big project because I have to bring the animals with me, and they're in five giant crates, and there's transportation set up. I'm thinking of going smaller with my booths for the other smaller cons, and so we had actually past Comic-Con, we had a model get into a prosthetic cyborg suit and walk around the con, and yeah, we did some pretty crazy stuff, and it was worth the thrill. I'm just, you know, looking at my budget and saying, wow, you know, okay, that was fun, but let's get real here. I could have made five comic books for how much I paid for that one costume.
Yeah, but you need attention, though, too. You know, you want to get people's attention.
Oh, yeah.
And that helps.
Yeah. Yes.
That stuff like that. You know, these guys, your animals would make great action figures.
Oh, yeah. At some point. Yeah, thank you, Wayne.
That would be great. Yeah. So you've mentioned WonderCon. I'm trying to get to there next year. I've never been to WonderCon. I've been to San Diego several times, not WonderCon.
WonderCon's different only because, you know, it's not San Diego, so the crowd's a little different because there are some people who have never been to a con go to that one, or the ones who can't get into Comic-Con go to WonderCon. That said, you know, WonderCon has some pretty amazing booths. And WonderCon in some ways is easier, was much easier for us to set up a booth there because we just roll right into the same floor and move all our stuff into the thing on the same floor. We never have to go up an elevator or anything else. It's all like moved in really nicely.
Cool.
So yeah, better, easier setup.
Well, boy, Alan, you're making all this wonderful stuff. I hope you keep
Thank
it up.
You,
Wayne. Make terrific things keep coming because it's very creative. It's very forward thinking. The characters are engaging, and so much goes on. And I can't tell you what you're going to do next. That's I love that.
Thanks,
Wayne. There's so many times on a comic, I'm sitting, okay, here's where this happens, and sure enough, I turn the page. Oh yeah, there it is. But with yours, I don't know what you're going to do, and I treasure that when I read something. So,
Wayne, can I tell you something? You've discovered, you unpeeled a bunch of interesting things about our writing style and what we do and some of the secrets that we implanted in there. But I wrote Genesis 2 five pages at a time because I did not want to know what was going to happen, and I didn't want Christian to know because then it would take the fun out of it. If we'd written all this, the whole thing with a synopsis and everything, it's like, yeah, we know what's going to happen next, and that's boring. So we knew it was going to finish a certain way. We knew, you know, there was going to be some sacrifice involved and all the other stuff, but we didn't know exactly what was going to happen. So we kept everybody on the edge of their seat for a while until the very end. So,
It's funny because I edit the book and he doesn't tell me everything that's going to happen. So as I go through the script, oftentimes he gets to a place. I was reading one book recently, and it looked like he was going to kill off one of the characters. And I said, oh, no, you can't kill that character. You cannot do that, I said. Oh, no, you can't do that. What it looks like you're going to do, don't do that, I said. You know, number one, it would be too pedestrian to just go ahead and kill that person. I said, let things go through. Don't make it completely resolve, but resolve nicely. And he did that, and I think it made for a really good, powerful story. But you know, I'm not a writer like you are. I can only envy. I can read something and say, I like that. That's good because this works and this works. But I haven't reached that place where you are, where you can think of those things and make them happen. You know, I haven't got there. So I just have to applaud your ability on that because when I read the book, I was very surprised as I went through. And I love that.
Wayne, you're very kind. But I want to say, if you drink enough coffee and don't take any hallucinating drugs, you still will be able to write stories. sometimes it's blending three or four different stories together to make it so unrecognizable that they're four different stories put together. And you can come up with stuff that way, too. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
Well, you're doing it. If that's the way you're doing it, you're doing a good job with it. So I have
Thanks,
to say
Wayne.
That's really excellent. So, man, Alan, as you keep doing things, I can't wait for more Genesis 2 and everything you're going to do. I'll keep my ear to the ground to hear the stuff that you come up. And if you get involved with some media stuff, boy, I'm going to be watching for that.
You know, You know what, Wayne? I'll reach out to you with via my guy Michael, who you've interacted with. Mm-hmm. But we'll definitely let you know if the screenplay is finished. I might send you the first copy. You Ooh. Might be able to read it. So that'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
Wonderful.
I'll give you comments. I'll never.
Oh, I know. That's what we need is comments.
Feedback. I always like to say it's feedback, but
yeah.
Well, and you're doing great stuff. I can't wait to see your stuff. I next time I bump into you, I'm going to buy whatever is new that I haven't gotten, because I want to keep this up, because this is a great book. And
if I'm at WonderCon, mm-hmm. let me save you some swag for you. So you come up and say, "Hey, Alan's Wayne. Oh, dang, Wayne, I've saved the bag for you. This is your stuff." Yeah,
I'd love to see that, because that would be wonderful stuff.
Great.
It's just great stuff. And now, if somebody wants to get Genesis 2, we mentioned a couple of places. Is it out on Comixology?
We're not on Comixology. They'll have to go through our website
to
be able to order it. And, I'll sign it. I basically sign every copy that goes out the door. Cool. So, yeah.
What about digital? Do you have digital versions?
We have a digital download. It's $12 for the whole book.
Oh.
But we're trying to actually it's a huge download. So unless people have a stable internet. Yeah, but most people have successfully done it. It's hard to do it on an iPad, but people have downloaded it on their computers, and it's been no problem.
Cool. Yeah, I remember you saying about that. Anyway, Alan, just keep it up, because, man, you're doing great stuff. I can't wait to see what's coming from you guys next, because I'm going to really enjoy it.
Thank you, Wayne. And let's stay in touch, and I'll try to get some of this other stuff to you. I didn't have time to talk about some of the other things that I'm working on, but I'll let you know privately what's going on that end, too.
That would be great.
All right, sir.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
A wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another great interview. But until then, keep reading your comics.